God's work on the fourth day, Genesis 1:14a. And God said, Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night. This is the work of the fourth day, in which those all beautiful creatures, the sun and the moon, together with all the stars, were created by the Word. Nor were they created as to their substances and their bodies only, but as to the blessings of God upon them and through them, that is, as to their powers, effects, and influence. You heard above that on the first day the light was created. This light continued to illumine all things, instead of the sun, the moon, and the stars, until the fourth day. And on the fourth day, those authors and rulers of the day and the night were themselves created. Hence, there has here arisen a question with reference to this first light, whether after the sun and the moon were created it disappeared altogether or remained, embodied in the sun. And on this point a great diversity of sentiments and opinions has existed. My simple belief is that the nature of all these works of God is the same. As on the first day the rude, unformed heaven and earth were created, and afterward completely formed and perfected, as the originally imperfect heaven was afterward stretched out and adorned with light, and as the earth was first called forth from the waters, and then clothed with trees and herbs, so the first formed light of the first day, which was then only begun, as it were, and imperfect, was afterwards perfected and completed by the addition of those new creatures, the sun, the moon, and the stars. Others say that this original light still remains, but is obscured by the brightness of the sun. Both opinions may be true, for it may be that the original light still remains, and was, as it were, the seed light of the sun and the moon. Moses, however, makes a difference here, calling the sun and the moon the greater lights. What philosophers say, therefore, concerning the magnitude of these bodies has properly nothing to do with the text before us. What we have here to do is to observe that the Scriptures do not speak of these bodies with reference to the magnitude of the bodies themselves, but with reference to the magnitude of their light. For if you would compare the sun with the stars, and collect all the stars into one body, you would have a body perhaps greater than the sun, but that the whole body of stars together would not form a light equal to the light of the sun. On the contrary, if you could divide the sun into minute particles, the most minute particle would surpass in brightness the brightest star. For all these bodies were created with an essential difference, as Paul affirms, There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars, etc. 1 Corinthians 15:41. And this difference does not consist in the nature or magnitude of their bodies, but in the nature and essentiality of their creation itself, so that in this the work of God's creation is more wonderful. Hence, marvelous beyond expression or thought is the fact that the rays of the sun should be dispersed through such length and breadth, with such wonderful properties of nourishment and heat to all bodies under their influence, and that too while the sun itself revolves with such amazing velocity. Astronomers say also that the stars are lighted, as it were, by the sun, so that they shine. Likewise, they say that the moon borrows its light from the sun. And this is beautifully proved in an eclipse of the moon, when the earth comes between the sun and the moon, and the light of the sun is not transmitted to the moon. I do not deny nor reject this, but I do hold, however, that it is of divine power that this efficacy is added to the sun to light and illumine even the distant moon and stars with its own light. Likewise, that the moon and stars are so created that they have the capacity to receive the light that is projected from the sun so far away. Augustine sets forth two opinions about the moon in the beginning of the 12th Psalm, and in his discussions he forces an allegory upon the church, while he himself defines nothing. But I leave this, for from astronomers, as from master artists, we most readily learn what points are possible to be disputed in this science. I am satisfied that in these bodies so glorious and useful for our life, we discern the goodness and power of God, who created such things by His Word, and conserve them to the present day for our use. These are matters belonging to our calling, or profession, that is, they are theological themes, and they have the efficacy to comfort and strengthen our hearts. What is further discussed concerning the nature and attributes of these creatures, although for the most part approaching the truth and studied with profit, yet I see that the reason is by far too weak to understand these things perfectly. Therefore, the greatest men of genius and learning, overwhelmed by the worthiness of these creatures, could not conclude otherwise than that they are eternal and, as it were, gods. Since, therefore, philosophers define a star to be a denser point within its own orbit, we come much nearer the truth when we define it to be light created by God through His Word, and it is indeed more likely that the stars are bodies round like the sun, little globes fixed to the firmament, so that each gives light by night according to its gift and its creative functions.